ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घायति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणीं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरम्। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। नमो महावेदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरहच्छे नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूप स्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वांचा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so welcome everyone. We are continuing our study on Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto. So last time we heard about Shukdev Goswami describing the universal form of the Lord. And he was describing that the Ashtanga Yogi who has not yet got the purification of heart after performing the asana, pratyahar, pranayam stages of Ashtanga Yoga, if he has not come to the level of complete sense control, he has not derived the purification of heart, he should continue with meditating on the universal form of the Lord. And then we heard about what is the description of universal form of the Lord. All the different planetary system being situated as the different limbs of the Virata Purusha, and all these various devatas who are the controller of various aspects or the controller of various sensory functions, they are also as the parts of the limbs of the Virata Purusha. And then moving forward, Shukdev Goswami is describing a yogi who is trying to attain perfection in this Ashtanga Yoga process. He should not get distracted with ulterior motives or the ulterior destinations like going to Swarga or even up to the level of Brahma Loka also. Because these places, even Swarga, it's a temporary place. After every Brahma's one day, there is a dissolution up to the level of Swarga. So it's not a permanent position. And then one should not get diverted based on this Karmakanda philosophy, Karmakanda as a ritualistic processes to attain some material benefits. If somebody has already renounced the house, it's performing so many austerities, trying to get perfection in the yogic siddhi, he should not try to make his life comfortable in the sense looking for a comfortable place to stay, nice food to eat. Everything is provided by the Lord in nature. There is fruits available on the trees. One can pluck the fruits from the trees and sustains himself on those foods. There is no need to acquire utensils. One can just use his hands as the cups and the plate and just use those to eat the food. There is no need to collect clothes to cover the body. There is enough tree bark available. All the clothes which are rejected by others lying on the roadside, one can just utilize those clothes. There is no need to acquire a comfortable house, a comfortable place to stay. There are plenty of caves which one can use for his accommodation. So like that, Shukdev Goswami has described various things. And on top of that, he says, a sannyasi, a yati, a vanaprastha, he should not go to the householders to beg food for himself. The purpose of going to the householder, it should not be to beg for his comforts. One should be completely dependent on the Lord. And what were the two principles of Sharanagati we discussed? Anybody remember the two principles of Sharanagati which one should try to
protector and the provider?
Yes. Considering the Lord to be his protector. So, Rakshishati iti Vishwaso. And the second one is Gopatritve Varnam Tatha. Krishna is the protector. He will protect me in all situations. And he is the provider. He will make arrangement for my sustenance. So, with these two principles, one should lead his life, not trying to make his life comfortable. Now, he is describing for the persons who have renounced the house, taken to this strict process of Ashtanga Yoga. So one should not be dependent on others. And how does it apply to us as the practitioners of Bhakti Yoga? How does it apply to the devotees who are practicing the process of bhakti? This particular few statements. So we discussed that also last time, that one should not become too much into the mood of accumulating, right? One should not over endeavor to collect more than necessary. Yes, as a householder, we have to maintain the family, we have to do our occupational duties, but one should not get into the mood of over-accumulating, thinking, oh, let me save this much for my future generations to come. And when this principle of not going to householders to beg for our comfort, this principle applies to us who are practicing devotees, who are trying to serve Krishna in the temple, trying to make arrangements in the temple. So for that also, generally we use the term sometimes fundraising, right? With that, okay, we have to raise the fund because we need to run the temple, make all the necessary arrangements to serve the Lord. But using these principles which are given by Shukdev Goswami, that can be applied in that particular aspect also. So rather than using the term as fundraising, our philosophy should be friend-raising. Not fundraising, friend-raising. So what does friend-raising mean? That we are approaching the people, we are developing a relationship with them. And why we are going to them? One should not feel that, oh, this person has come to me, he is looking for some donations. Right? He is looking for donation to for temple, for his programs or something. So that should not be the impression the other person should have. Rather, we should approach other person that we have come to give something to you. And what do we have come to give? We have come to give you Krishna. We have come to bring you towards Krishna, give you the knowledge about Krishna, give you the process of bhakti, the process of chanting the holy name. So rather than fundraising, it's friend raising, and rather than receiving from them, it's giving to them, giving Krishna to others. And in the process, if somebody feel inspired, right, if they naturally get inspired and they will like to contribute. So if somebody has a desire, yes, we are very impressed with whatever all the services going on, we have received a lot from you and we would like to give something back and we feel inspired to contribute in some way, then we can facilitate that. Okay, you feel inspired to give something, so where will you like to contribute? Are you inspired to contribute something for arranging the nice dresses for Krishna, arranging the nice bhoga for Krishna? Are you inspired to arrange for the flowers for Krishna? Are you inspired to arrange for the festivals for Krishna? Are you inspired to give books in charity so that other people can receive knowledge? So how somebody feel inspired? One should not feel as a burden that, oh, here, they have come again to ask me for something. The inspiration should come from inside. Yes, I feel inspired. I will like to contribute. This is for a good cause. So this is how we can also utilize this principle, not going to others as a begging purpose or just to make them feel, oh, we have come to ask you something. Rather, they should feel, yes, they have come to give me something. So we discussed that point. And then moving forward, after describing these various levels of austerity, Shukadev Goswami is further describing that whoever is able to follow these austerities, their heart has become purified. And what happens when the heart has become purified? He is without any desires. And then the Lord, who is already residing in the heart, he makes himself visible in the heart. So one, so the Ashtanga Yogi, who is trying to meditate on the universal form of the Lord, when he has acquired enough purification, Lord himself appears in his heart. He gives his darshan in the heart as Paramatma aspect. And there are many pastimes, many stories, right? In Narad Muni describes his previous life. When his mother has died, he was wandering in the forest, and as he had learned from the sages, he was meditating on the Lord. And one time, Lord gave his darshan in the heart. But for him, this darshan was for a brief time, because Lord wanted to increase his intensity, his desire to surrender to him. So he gave his darshan and then he immediately disappeared. And Narad was kind of searching for the Lord. Where are you? Why am I not able to see you again? And then he heard the voice of the Lord. And there is another pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, who got instructions from Narad Muni and he went to the forest. He was doing the Ashtanga Yoga process. He did severe austerities. And then Lord appeared in his heart, and then from the heart, Lord appeared in front of him in the, not just Paramatma aspect, but in the real Bhagavan Savroop, he appeared in front of him. So Ashtanga Yogi, who has got enough purification in the heart, Lord gives his darshan in the Paramatma aspect in his heart. And how he should meditate on this Paramatma aspect. So first of all, when Lord has given his darshan as Paramatma, who will try to ignore that form? So Shukadeva Goswami is saying, only the materialistic person will neglect such transcendental thoughts and take to the non-permanent names only. Seeing the masses of people fallen in the river of suffering as the consequences of acquiring the result of their own work. So only a person who is too much attached to this non-permanent world. Here it says the non-permanent names only. Because here in this world everything is non-permanent. Even if somebody acquires a lot of name and fame, all those names stay for some time only. They don't stay forever. There may be many great Bollywood stars, Hollywood stars, sports people. They become famous for some point of time, but they don't remain famous forever. And many, many yogis may have come who acquired a lot of mystic powers. The Ashta Siddhis. How many of those yogis are remembered today? So people come and go. This world is non-permanent. It's a world of impermanent nature, non-permanent names only. So a materialistic person only will not focus on such transcendental thoughts. So Ashtanga Yogi, he progresses further. Now from universal form, he graduates to meditate on to the Paramatma aspect. So Prabhupada in the purport described, there are two type of people, two type of transcendentalists. So some people search for happiness in this world. They search for happiness by following the karmakanda process. They want to acquire some material benefit, acquire some name, fame, wealth, prosperity, and they want to become happy in this world. But there are some another people, after going through all these various processes, they come to the conclusion, they go to the another extreme corner and they conclude there is no happiness in this material world whatsoever. Not just in this material world, there is no happiness anywhere. So that is the extreme conclusion. There is no happiness anywhere. So it's like somebody is going through a deserted land. He looks at a mirage, and when he looks at a mirage, he thinks this is water. So he's searching for water everywhere, but as he gets closer, it's not water. It's just some reflection. And after searching throughout like that, he concludes there is no water. And if the conclusion comes, there is no water here, and I conclude there is no water anywhere. Right? But is that an intelligent conclusion? Because somebody was looking for water in desert. He did not find the water in desert, and he concludes there is no water anywhere. So that is an extreme situation. So same way, some people who have become frustrated to find happiness in this world, they will conclude there is no happiness anywhere at all. But an intelligent person will look for water around the water bodies. So he will come to the river, he will come to the ocean, and there is plenty of water. So same way, if somebody is concluding there is no happiness anywhere at all, that is also a wrong conclusion. Because in this material world, yes, there is no permanent happiness. But there is another place, the spiritual world, where there is lot of happiness. This place, the other place, spiritual world, is called Vaikuntha, which is full of happiness. Sat Chit Anand. It's full of bliss. So these people who have concluded the extreme side that there is no happiness anywhere at all, they don't want to just settle anywhere. They want to become one with the Lord. They want to merge into the impersonal Brahman. So they want to give up their individuality. They think merging into the Brahman is giving up our individuality and we become one with the Lord. Actually, that is not the true scenario also. Merging into the Brahman, the impersonal liberation, also doesn't mean that one gives up his individuality. One still maintains his individuality. It's like the sparks in the fire. So the spark of the fire, it has its individuality, even though it's part of the fire. And sometimes people who are Mayavadi philosophy, they will give this example: as a bird enter into the tree, it just disappears in the tree. Yes, it disappears in the tree. The tree is green color, the bird is green color. So you, when it enters into the tree, you are not able to see that bird. But the bird, it's still up there in the tree. The bird still has its individual position there. It's not that it has given up its individuality. So same way, when the living entity merges into the Brahman, it still maintains its individuality. So here, Shukdev Goswami is describing the person who has graduated to the level of meditating on the Paramatma. He is able to see Paramatma in his heart. So he now starts to meditate on that Paramatma aspect. But how does one know that is this really the Paramatma who has appeared in the heart? Or is it somebody's own imagination? If somebody is just hallucinating, right? How do I know it's Paramatma appeared in my heart, or I am just imagining something on my own? So how does the Paramatma aspect, Paramatma form of the Lord looks like? So here now comes the description of the Paramatma form. And how does this Paramatma form looks like? The personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart and measuring only 8 inches. With 4 hands carrying the lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conchal and a club respectively. So this is basically the same form of the Lord, 4-handed Vishnu form, which in a small size is appearing in the heart. And how much is the size? What is the size of this Paramatma form of the Lord? Ashtangli. Measuring 8 inches. And actually there is a term called, what is the size of the Lord? From the thumb to the ring finger. So this much is. Bolte na, ek git lamba. So in the kind of a local language term, they say just this length, which is from the thumb to the ring finger, that much long. That is the size of the Paramatma form. And what is he carrying in his heart? He is carrying Shankh Chakra Gada Padam, a wheel of the chariot, a lotus, a conchal and a club. As Lord appeared in the womb of Uttara. Right? So that description is similar. There the size of the Lord which is described is even smaller. What was that size? Just the size of a thumb. So he appeared in the womb of Uttara, which is as a Paramatma form, carrying Shankh Chakra Gada Padam to protect Parikshit. So the Supreme Lord, who is already residing in the heart, he makes himself visible to this Ashtanga Yogi. And his mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes are spread like the petals of a lotus. So Bhagwan ko bolte Kamal Nayan. So Kamal Nayan means his eyes are spread like a lotus. It's a long eyes, like the lotus leaf. And his garments are yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba tree, a kadamba flower. And all these garments are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold set with jewels. And he wears a glowing headdress and earring. So he is wearing yellow garment, he is wearing a crown on his head, all his clothes are bedecked with jewels, and his lotus feet are placed on the whirl of lotus-like heart of this great mystic. In the heart of this yogi, which is like the lotus flower, so the Supreme Lord, the Lord as Paramatma, he is standing on this lotus of the heart of this yogi. And on his chest is the Kastuba jewel, which is marked with a beautiful calf. तो भगवान का जब भी डिस्क्रिप्शन आता है, आइदर इट्स अ परमात्मा फॉर्म और द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड, द पर्सनल भगवान स्वरूप, द डिस्क्रिप्शन इज डिस्क्राइब्ड लाइक दिस. सो ऑन हिज चेस्ट ही इज हैविंग अ कस्तुब ज्वेल विच हैज एनग्रेविंग ऑफ अ काफ एंड देर आर अदर ज्वेल्स ऑन हिज शोल्डर्स. हिज कंप्लीट टोर्सो इज गार्लैंडेड विद फ्रेश फ्लावर्स. तो भगवान माला पहने हुए फ्लावर्स का, फ्रेश फ्लावर गार्लैंड्स. इट्स नॉट लाइक द गार्लैंड द फ्लावर्स विच विल विदर बाय द एंड ऑफ द डे. सो दीज फ्लावर्स आर एवर फ्रेश. हियर द वर्ड यूज इज अमला लक्षयम. अमला अमलन लक्षमाया अमलह, विच डज नॉट विदर, जो मुरझाता नहीं है. सो दीज फ्लावर्स दे नेवर विदर एंड नन ऑफ दीज ऑर्नामेंट्स, दीज क्लोथ्स, दीज ज्वेल्स, दीज फ्लावर्स, दीज आर नॉट मेड ऑफ एनी मटीरियल इनग्रीडियंट्स. अदरवाइज देर विल बी नो चांस ऑफ डेकोरेटिंग इट द बॉडी ऑफ द लॉर्ड. सो इन द स्पिरिचुअल वर्ल्ड ऑल्सो ऑल दीज थिंग एग्जिस्ट, but it's not made of material elements, right? In this material world, we know everything is made up of these five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. No matter what the object is, ultimately it will become dust. But in the spiritual world, there also all the variety exists. There are so many wonderful flowers are there, all these pearls, jewels are there. So Krishna's body is decorated with all these valuable jewels and these nice flowers which never wither. And what else he is wearing? He is well decorated with the ornament on his waist. तो भगवान की कमर के ऊपर क्या है? कमर पट्टी, belt. And his, all the rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. भगवान की उंगलियों में अच्छे अच्छे jewels की अंगूठियां हैं. एंड हिज लेगलेट्स, हिज बैंगल्स, हिज ऑयल्ड कर्ली स्पॉटलेस हेयर विद ब्लूइश टिंट एंड ऑन टॉप ऑफ दैट हिज ब्यूटिफुल स्माइल, दीज आर ऑल वेरी प्लीजिंग. सो दैट इज द डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ द यूनिवर्स ऑफ द परमात्मा फॉर्म ऑफ द लॉर्ड. हाउ डज द परमात्मा फॉर्म लुक्स लाइक? So based on those description, this is how the deity form of the Lord is carved. Because everybody does not have the qualification or does not have the ability to meditate on the Paramatma aspect, and we don't have the eyes to see the Lord face to face. That's why Lord, out of his kind mercy, he appears in his Archavigraha form. And sometimes people will argue, oh, this murti, this is just a murti, किसी ने बनाया है उसको. It's a man made. The image of God is made by a man. But this is not the case. The Archa Vigraha is carved based on the descriptions given in the scriptures, how the Lord's form looks like. And then when the deities are decorated in the temple, right, when you go to the temple, you take nice darshan of Radha Kunj Bihari. You see nice clothes, nice jewelry, nice rings on the arms, nice anklets in the feet, and Lord is wearing some long hairs also, and the crown on the head. So all these are based on the descriptions in the scripture. How does the form of the Lord is described in scriptures? So he has a smiling face. Prabhu, if you can keep to the end, just note down. So, the form of the Lord is described here. the hair of the Lord. How they are described here? Snigdha amala akunchita neela kuntaler. Oily oil, his curly spotless hair with bluish tint. Snigdha amala akunchita neela kuntaler. तो भगवान के जो परमात्मा एस्पेक्ट भगवान का जो दिखाई दे रहा है हार्ट में, हिज हेयर्स आर स्पॉटलेस कर्ली शाइनिंग बिकॉज ऑफ द ऑयल इन द हेयर्स एंड इट्स हैविंग अ ब्लूइश टिंट. देयर इज अनदर डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ लॉर्ड्स पर्सनल फॉर्म एंड हाउ डज दैट फॉर्म लुक्स लाइक. Bhisham Pitama is describing the personal form of the Lord when he is lying on the shayya of the arrows. He is seeing Krishna face to face in front of him, but he is remembering his form, how he was seeing him in the war field. So there he is describing Yudhitaruga Rajo Vidhumra Vishvaka Kachalulita Hashramavarya Alankritasai Mamanishita Sharair Vividhamanaha. How is that form of the Lord looking like? So that is the difference in the Paramatma form and the personal form of the Lord. So this form, Yudhitaruga Rajo Vidhumra Vishvaka, his hair is not blackish, oily, curly, looking like shining with bluish tint. In that particular form which Bhishma is describing, his hair is dusty because of the dust raised by the hoofs of the horses. जो घोड़ों के टापों से मिट्टी उड़ रही है वो मिट्टी भगवान के बालों में पड़ रही है. एंड हिज हेयर्स आर नॉट ब्लैक एनीमोर, इट्स लाइक ग्रेइश. एंड ऑन टॉप ऑफ दैट कच लुलित श्रम वार अलंकृता से ही इज हैविंग द ड्रॉप्स ऑफ परस्पिरेशन बिकॉज ऑफ हिज efforts to carry or to drive the chariot of Arjuna to protect him from the arrows of all these opponents. He is having these drops of perspiration. And then mama nishita sharir vividhamanah, and my arrows, so Bhishma is saying this, my arrows has broken all the kavacha on the body of the Lord. So this is how he is meditating on the personal form of the Lord. So Paramatma aspect, in the Paramatma form, it's very spotless, curly, black, oiled with the bluish tint. And then Lord's magnanimous pastime and his glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indication of his extensive benedictions. So Lord's glances, his smiling face is all a big benediction. And how is that a big benediction? It describes in the scripture, just because of the glance of the Lord, because of his smile, all the threefold misery, tapatraya, that's all destroyed, it's all removed. And what is this threefold misery? Adi bhautik klesh, adi atmik klesh, adi devik klesh. So if you get the mercy of the Lord, you are able to see the smile of the Lord, his smiling glance on you, means all the threefold misery is removed. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. So this Ashtanga Yogi who was earlier meditating on the universal form of the Lord, now he should take to meditating on this Paramatma form of the Lord. Yavan manodharyan avistate. As long as the mind can be concentrated by this process of dharana. Right? Dharanaya. And as we move from dharana to dhyan, what is the difference from dharana to dhyan?
Dharana is overall meditation, and dhyanas, meditation on focused parts or limbs of the Lord.
Yes, so one, so after meditating, focusing on the overall Paramatma form of the Lord, then one should progress further from dharana to dhyana and then start meditating on each and every limb of the Lord individually. Ekekasho angani dhya anubhavayet padadi yavad dasitim gadabhratah jitam jitam sthanam apohayam dharayet param param shuddhyati dhiraha yatha yatha. So one should gradually move from dharana to dhyana. Ek eksho angani dhya anubhavayet. One should start meditating on each and every limb of the Lord. So process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and then progress to his smiling face. Jitam jitam sthanam apohaya dharayet param param shuddhyati dhira yatha yatha. As he is meditating from one limb, jaise as he is progressing from one limb to another limb, he is progressing from looking at the lotus feet, progressing to the smiling face of the Lord, he is getting more and more purified. So one should start the meditation process from the lotus feet of the Lord and gradually move towards the smiling face. So the meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and in this way higher and higher. And more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limb, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. But now a very important, interesting question comes. But isn't it that one start meditating on the Paramatma form when he has already become purified? Because Shukdev Goswami earlier described that if somebody is not purified in the heart, he should meditate on the universal form of the Lord. And once he has acquired purification, then he becomes eligible to see the Paramatma form in the heart, to start meditating on the Paramatma form. So why it's said here again, that as he keep meditating more and more from one limb to another, moving forward to the smiling face of the Lord, he is getting purified. Param param shuddhyati dhiya yatha yatha. See, we should understand the purification is in the absolute sense or in the relative sense. So when we speak about purification, it's relative, because we have a big pile of impurity in our heart. So when we say purification, it doesn't mean the whole big pile has been removed and then we achieve the state of purification. So there is a gradual purification happening, little amount of purification happening, as we say in the progress in bhakti, from the stage of sadhu sangha to prema. Adhau shraddha tatha sadhu sangha tatha bhajana kriya tato anartha nivritti. Right? And after anartha nivritti, then nishtha, ruchi, prema, bhava, prema, all these stages come. So when we say bhajan kriya anartha nivritti, what does anartha nivritti mean? Does it mean all the anarthas have been eradicated 100%? So anarthas are still there. It has been removed enough for us to develop more faith. To come to the level of nishtha and engage in the process of bhakti with more determination. So it's not an absolute term, it's a relative sense. And same way here, there has been enough purification that one is eligible to see the Paramatma form of the Lord. And now he As he is meditating on the Paramatma form, he is acquiring more and more and more purification. Actually, this purification continues. The process of purification continues till the end. From Adhav Shraddha to Prem, in that journey also, anarthas are still there till the level of Prem. When one reaches to the level of Prema, then all the anarthas are removed. So it's a gradual journey, it's overlapping stages. It's not that one stage is done, now I move to the next stage. Now this stage is done, now I move to the next stage. So here, as a yogi is meditating on the Paramatma form, a limb after limb after limb he is progressing, he is acquiring more and more purification of the heart. Yavanna yaet paravare asmin visveshvare drishtir bhakti yoga tavat savaya purushasya rupam kriyavasane prayatah samret. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, who is a seer of both the transcendental and material world, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So here again Shukdev Goswami is saying that unless one has acquired enough purification to become eligible to meditate on the Paramatma form, he should continue to meditate on the universal form of the Lord. So gradual progression from meditation on universal form to the Paramatma form. Even when we progress in the process of bhakti, so there is a gradual progress. Earlier somebody is completely into its materialistic life, then somebody come to the process of bhakti, slowly start coming in the association of devotees, taking to this process of chanting, process of hearing and reading, then coming to more association. So like that, it's a gradual progress. It's not that one day he comes to the in the temple, association of devotees, and next day he says, okay, I quit everything, I leave my house, I leave my family, I leave my occupation, and I will settle in the temple. I want to engage in 24 hours. Because that may happen. In some cases, somebody may become very enthusiastic sentimentally that I want to do this. But that stage does not last long. Right? That bhava, that emotion doesn't last long. And then the person may completely reject everything and again move back into the materialistic life. So the process is a gradual transition. And how is that gradual transition? How do you understand that? Like when you are walking also. Right? When you are walking on the road. So when you lift your back foot, before that you place your front foot on the ground. It's not that before putting your front foot you have lifted the back foot also and just in the air with both foot. So there is something called gait cycle. If you have heard the terminology. So in the gait cycle, how does that happen? There is a different stages in the walking movement also. So you put your front foot in on the ground, then you lift your back foot. So that is the process, how one is progressing gradually in the Ashtanga Yoga, moving from the universal form to the Paramatma form. Another very interesting example I will give you. So if somebody want to get into a running bus, how do you get into a running bus? So you want to catch a bus which has already started. Aisa nahi hai ki koi jump maar ke seedha bus ke andar ghus jayega. Right? So it cannot happen that you just jump into the bus. So one is starting to run along with the bus, catches on to the handle of the bus or something. So he try to come to the slowly moving speed of the bus. Then he will put his first foot onto the bus. And as he has become comfortable, then he will lift up his second foot and get into the bus. So he will start running with the bus to come to the level of the speed of the bus. And same way when you want to get down from a running bus. Has anybody tried getting down from a running bus? So ऐसा नहीं है कि running bus से चलते चलते एकदम से jump मार के बाहर कूद गए and then you will be all walking nicely. This may happen in movies only. किसी ने चलती ट्रेन से छलांग लगा दी और सीधा आके जमीन पर खड़ा हो गया. So this doesn't happen. Don't try that in real life. So if somebody want to get down from a running bus, actually I did that once in my college life. So our hostel was quite like maybe 2 kilometers away from the college. And in the morning, some students who want to do some adventure, right? They will not get into the bus. Bus is standing there at the bus stop. They just don't want to get into the bus. And as the bus start running, they will just climb on the back of the bus and just hang in the back. And as they reach there, they will just jump down from the bus. And I was pretty naive. I have never done that. So once they challenged me, oh, karke dikhao. In college time, you have this, you want to show off to people sometime. Yes, I can also do it. So rather than getting into the bus, so I also kind of hung behind the bus. And as the turn came where the bus is going into its regular route and the college is on the other side, so all the students will just jump down from there. And I had no clue how to get down from a running bus. I just left my hands. Thinking, okay, I will just stand on the ground. But what will happen? You have the inertia. And because of that inertia, your body wants to keep moving forward. Right? So if you are not running with the bus to just get down, slowly, slowly stop, you will roll on the ground then. So I just left the hands and I don't know what happened. When I came to know something what happened, I was on the ground, rolling on the road. My pant was torn off. There was bleeding happening. So how to get down from a bus?
Get down and keep running.
So you have to put your foot on the ground and keep running with the bus. And then when you become comfortable, just let the hands go, let it go. And slowly, slowly keep running. And then you come to stop. So that's how gradually one should take to this meditation process also. One is gradually shifting the focus from universal form to Paramatma form. And in the process of bhakti also, that's why we describe it's a gradual process. One should not think, oh, I have been doing it for 2 years, I am doing it for 3 years, I don't see much change in me. Because it all depends on the pile of anarthas we have. It takes time to get rid of that, but one should not just utilize it as an excuse that, oh, it's a gradual process. Use it as an excuse, it's okay, even 30 years, 40 years, I am stuck with one round of chanting. Jab kismat mein hoga, Bhagwan bulayenge, tab mandir mein aayenge. So people take to both extremes, right? Sometimes people become completely karmavadi, that, oh, I just want to become like a paramahansa in one day. Or on the other side, somebody is thinking, why I am not making progress? Jab Bhagwan ki kripa hogi, tab mera kuch hoga. We have to keep endeavoring from our side and then leave the rest to the Lord. But we have to do our endeavor. We have to stay in the process, keep doing our activities of sadhana. The chanting, hearing, reading, association of devotees. So there is, in Bhagavad Gita also, actually Lord Krishna described the same situation when he is describing the process of yoga, 6th chapter, which is Dhyana Yoga. So Lord Krishna described 2 terms. One is called Aruruksha stage. And the other stage is called Aruruda. So Aruruda matlab, you are situated on that. Jaise koi Aruruksha stage means somebody is trying to climb on the chariot. Aruruda stage is somebody has already climbed on the chariot. He's settled on the chariot. So in Arurukhya stage, your one foot is on the ground and you are putting the second foot onto the chariot. So you are climbing onto the chariot. Aruruda stage is where your both foot are on the chariot and you have settled on the chariot. So Lord Krishna is describing Bhagavad Gita. Arurukshar Munir Yogam Karma Karana Muchyate. Yoga Arudasya Taseva Samaha Karana Muchyate. For one who is a neophyte in this yoga process, in this yoga system, work without attachment is said to be the means. And one who has already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So when somebody is still making progress, for him, he need to continue with his Swadharma also. And once he has become perfected in the yoga, he has achieved the perfection on that process, for him there is no other duty is left to be done. But when we are progressing on the path, either it's Ashtanga Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, we need to carry out our regular duties also. But what is the difference? Work without attachment. So as we discussed in the first session of the second canto, we were describing, right, the materialistic people who have no inclination in spiritual life, they just waste all their time in those four basic activities: sleeping, mating, eating, defending. So their day is spent in earning money, taking care of all these various things, and at the night it's spent in either the sex life or in sleep. So all this time is wasted like that. But for a devotee who is trying to serve Krishna, who is progressing in bhakti, he wants to utilize his time in a proper manner. So what is the difference in a non-devotee and a devotee? See, a devotee is also doing his duties. He is also doing his swadharma, which is taking care of the family, taking care of his occupation, taking care of all those basic things. But what is the difference? Externally, both devotee and non-devotee may seem to be doing similar things. But a non-devotee, his whole consciousness is absorbed on the result of that activity. His whole consciousness is, how will I enjoy the result of this activity? He has nothing to do with Krishna. Right? There is no God in the picture. But for a devotee, he is also doing, he is taking care of the children, he is taking care of family, he is taking care of his work, his home. But he is keeping Krishna in the picture. He is keeping Krishna in the center. And his aim is not to have enjoyment. He is doing the activity without attachment to the result of all those activities. See, again, there is one more point I want to clarify. When we say there is no attachment to the result of those activities, does not mean we are not concerned about result. What is the difference in being attached with the result or concerned about the result? So you are attached about the result means you want to enjoy the result. But you are concerned about the result that you want to see, I want to do my best possible. I want to put my best endeavor for the satisfaction of Krishna. Aisa nahi hai ki rasoi mein puriya bana rahe hain, sabji bana rahe hain, bhagwan ke liye bhoga lagane ke liye. And think, you know, I am not attached with the result. Puri jalti hai to jal jaye, sabji jalti hai to jal jaye, I don't care. Yes, you are still concerned about the result because this is for Krishna. So we want to give our best possible endeavor. But we are not attached to the result for our own enjoyment. So here also, from this is a journey from Aruruksha stage to Arudha stage. When somebody is progressing in either Ashtanga Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, one is progressing in bhakti, at the same time one is maintaining his swadharma also. And then moving forward, so 2 to 15, canto 2, chapter 2, text 15 onwards, Now Shukdev Goswami is describing how a yogi leaves his body who is desiring for liberation. See, when a yogi, when they leave the body, they have many considerations. They are concerned about the time of leaving the body, the place. Either it's Uttarayana or Dakshinayana. It's a early morning time or night time. So they have a lot of considerations because their destination depends on many factors. And this is specifically for those yogis who are desiring to merge into the impersonal Brahman. Because in Bhagavad Gita also Lord Krishna describes in 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that when a yogi leaves his body at the time of Uttarayana, then he achieves a particular destination. If he leaves his body at the time of Dakshinayana, when the sun travels to the south, he receives to a particular destination. So all these various considerations are there. So whenever a yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be attached with the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed and regulating all his life here. He should control the senses by his mind. So Shukdev Goswami is describing about first the situation of a perfected yogi who is focusing on the personal form of the Lord. That he should not be concerned about the time, the place, he should not get attached to these parameters. And why he is mentioning this thing? He is trying to pacify the mind of Parikshit Maharaj that you should not be concerned about the place and time and all that. Just attentively hear the glories of the Supreme Lord. Because Parikshit Maharaj may be thinking that I am about to die in 7 days. I don't know what will be the time frame of that time. Is it Uttarayana or Dakshinayana? Because there are many descriptions when a yogi should leave the body. So Shukdev Goswami is describing a perfected yogi should not be concerned about these things. He should sit comfortably, pacify his mind, control his senses with the help of mind. And then he will describe the situation of other yogis who are desiring to merge into the impersonal, how they want to leave the body, what considerations they have. So in Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter 14 text, Lord is describing clearly that a person who is totally engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord and who constantly remembers Him at every step, easily obtains the mercy of the Lord by entering into His personal contact. Such devotees do not need to seek any opportune moment to leave the present body, but those who are mixed devotees, so who are not Shuddha Bhaktas or who are not a perfected yogi, who is a Mishra yogi, so who are a mixed Bhakta alloyed with the fruitive action or empirical philosophical speculation, requires an opportune moment for quitting his body. For them, the opportune moments are stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.23-26. But those opportune moments are not as important as one's being a successful yogi who is able to quit his body as he likes. Such a yogi must be competent to control his senses by the mind. And the mind is easily conquered simply by engaging it at the lotus feet of the Lord. Gradually, by such service, all the senses become automatically engaged in the service of the Lord. That is the way of merging into the absolute truth. So, Prabhupada is writing in this purport that there are many considerations given, but a devotee of the Lord who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, he does not need to worry about any opportune moments. For him, he just need to meditate on the Lord. He need to remember the pastime of the Lord, chant the holy name of the Lord, and every moment becomes a perfected moment. But for any yogi who is desiring a particular destination, then he has to worry about many different considerations. What is the right time to leave? What is the right place to leave? So when we hear about these descriptions also in the scripture, when scriptures are describing this, we should not think that, okay, this description has no relevance at all. See, whatever is described in the Vedic literature, in the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, everything has some relevance. There is nothing described in the Vedas which does not bear fruit. See, even Karmakanda process, it has result, right? There is nothing in the Vedas described which does not bear fruit. So this processes of leaving the body in certain situations, at certain moments, certain times, in certain circumstances, it also has some relevance for some people. See, it may not be relevant for us, but it is, one should not conclude it is no relevance at all. It has some relevance for somebody. So that's why we should not neglect all these various descriptions in the scripture. Because if somebody is neglecting these or nullifying these, it becomes Shruti Shastra Nindanam. Right? One of the offenses to the Shastra. Because when we start learning little philosophy, we learn in the Vedas there are many things described. There is a Karmakanda process described. There is all these various things described. And we should not be concerned about these. We should focus on the devotional process. Yes, that is true. It has relevance for us, but for somebody else, some other process is maybe more relevant. They are more attracted to a different process. So when we hear about these descriptions, one should not say, oh, Vedas, this is all deal with the three modes of material nature, and we should not consider these. We should not just worry about these. Because if we completely neglect these, then it becomes offense to the Shastra.
So are you saying whatever we are this second canto chapter 2, whatever we are going through now, it is from the Vedas?
Yeah, I mean, this is Vedic description also. It also describes the Ashtanga Yoga process. So the point I am saying is, for us, we know the process of bhakti. Because in Kali Yuga, that is the process of bhakti, is the Yuga Dharma. Kalauta Dhari Kirtanat. In Satya Yuga, the process of meditation is described. For Treta Yuga, the Yajnas is the process of self-realization. In Dwapara Yuga, elaborate temple worship is the process of self-realization. In Kali Yuga, Kaluta Dhari Kirtanat. The chanting of the holy name is Yuga Dharma as a process of self-realization. Ashtanga Yoga process is a bona fide process, yes. But in Kali Yuga, it's not possible to do that process. Because it takes long amount of time to get perfection in that process. And that is not the recommended process for Kali Yuga. So when we hear the description of all these various processes or these various things, one should not just nullify these. Because sometimes what happens is somebody may come and say, Prabhu, you know about in Vedas, it mentions in the Veda. And in my mind, I am thinking, Vedas, it's all bogus. I don't care about Veda, what is described in the Veda. In the Veda, it's all, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the Traigunya, right? Nishtraigunya Bhava. So just become free from the three modes of material nature. These Vedas deal with the three modes. I don't want to consider anything in the Vedas. So in our mind, sometime we get into that mood, that feeling that, oh, Vedas, it's all just waste of time. Yes, for us, maybe it's not relevance, the process, the path which we are following, but it may be having some relevance for somebody in some particular situation, in some particular time. So it's just like somebody is still very elementary school student. Right, somebody is reading a basic book of English, maybe ABC, and you say, oh, this ABC book, it's just waste of time. Here, read this big book. Say this, read this novel. So for that student, that ABC book is necessary. That is relevant for him. For us, if you have understood what is the recommended process in this yoga, and you have accepted that process, you have Shraddha in that, then that is not relevant for you. You don't need to go into that. It's not that, oh, I also have to do that. But somebody who has not developed the Shraddha in this process, he is more inclined to that. Let him do that and Lord will inspire him to ultimately come to the higher stage. So, when the yogi who has meditated on to the Paramatma aspect of the Lord and he want to merge into the Brahman, actually at that time also Lord further gives him inspiration. Because Lord has appeared in his heart as Paramatma, and as Paramatma sitting in his heart, he further inspires him. Are you sure you just want to merge into the impersonal Brahman, or you want to take to this process of devotional service? If the yogi want to progress further, being attracted to the form of the Lord, he want to render service to the Lord, then he start meditating onto the personal form of the Lord. And he want to develop relationship with the Lord, enter into the spiritual world. But if the yogi says, no, I am very fixed about my goal. I just want to merge into the impersonal Brahman. I want to just give up my individuality as per his mindset. And then the Lord facilitates, okay, this is you want to do, then continue. So then you just move forward, continue with this process and give up your subtle body also and merge into the impersonal Brahman. But if somebody says, yes, I will like to serve, and then the Lord facilitates. Right, as Dhruva Maharaj. So Lord appeared in front of him finally in the personal form. So the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self, and by doing this, fully satisfied, living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of peace. Labdho Pashantir Virm. Viramayeta Krityat, so that he ceases all other activities. So what is this process of merging into the impersonal? He merges his senses into his mind, he merges his mind into intelligence, and he merges his intelligence into the consciousness, he merges the consciousness into the Paramatma, and as then he gives up his body, he gives up everything, merges into the impersonal. So that is in one verse he described the process, how he attains to the situation of Labdhopashantir. And what is the state of Labdhopashantir? Labdhopashantir is when he attains to the full state of peace. There is no anxiety, there is no kaleshas, there is no material troubles. He attains to the perfected state of peace, and that is the stage of impersonal Brahman. So in that, so what exactly that Labdhopashanti state is, Shukadeva Goswami is describing here. In that transcendental state of Labdhopashanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time. The time factor has no role to play there, because this time factor even controls the demigods, who are the empowered rulers. Nor there is any mode of material goodness, what to speak of passion and ignorance. So this state of Labdhopashanti, it is beyond the jurisdiction of time, it is beyond the jurisdiction of three modes of material nature, nor the material causal ocean, and nor the material nature. So that is the spiritual sky, in the sense the impersonal Brahman of the Lord. So that's why there are two type of transcendentalists. One who want to just attain to this impersonal Brahman, and there is another type of transcendentalist who want to go even beyond this impersonal Brahman and enter into the spiritual world. So this impersonal Brahman is described as a state of Labdhopashanti, which is a peace. One attains full peace. So impersonal Brahman, it has two out of the three characteristics. We say Satchit Anand, right? The Supreme Lord is Satchit Anand, and spiritual world is full of, it's everything is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. But the state of impersonal Brahman, it is only Sat and Chit. So it is eternal. One can for eternity stay in the impersonal Brahman, and one is full of its original Savrupa as the soul, free from any conceptions of material nature, but there is no bliss. So there is peace, but no happiness. That's why the state described is labdopa shanti. There is shanti. There is a lot of peace there.
So
there is sat and chit. But in the spiritual world, it's sat, chit, anand. So there is eternity, knowledge and happiness, bliss. So that is the difference. So somebody want to just merge into the impersonal Brahman because he is frustrated, thinking there is no happiness whatsoever anywhere. So he comes to the conclusion, let me just enter into the impersonal Brahman. But generally, does people are okay with getting only peace? Generally we say, I want peace. Mujhe shanti chahiye, shanti chahiye, shanti chahiye. Right? We keep saying that. But generally, do you think people are okay with just getting peace? So what more you want? Ananda. Right? Just imagine if the kids are not at home. There is complete peace. You can do whatever you like to your choice. So you think, oh, this is very peaceful. Are you just okay with that? What do you try to do in that peaceful environment? Then you want to enjoy. Right? अगर किसी को घर के अंदर पूरा शांति मिल गया, if there is a peace, they want to give up that peace, they want happiness. Let me throw a party and enjoy. So ultimately, actually, people are looking for happiness, not just peace. So in the state of impersonal Brahman, there is peace, but there is no happiness. It is like we push you inside a dark room. It's a complete empty room. There is, in the middle of the room, there is a table chair. And we say, okay, just keep sitting there. There's no activity for you to do. Just keep sitting there. There's full shanti. Jitni shanti chahiye, sab shanti hai wahan par. Just baithe raho, kuch nahi hai karne ko. Will you be okay with that? You say, I'm bored. I want to do something. So that's why people who are desiring for impersonal Brahman, after even attaining to the state of impersonal Brahman, because there is no bliss there, then they come back into this material world. Because they have the desire, oh, let me do something at least. Here I can do something. They engage in some philanthropic activities or trying to do something good for the society. At least try to drive some sort of fulfillment, some sort of happiness out of that. So the impersonal Brahman is a state of peace, labdhopa shanti. A yogi who attains to that, he is free from the control of time and mode of material nature. But to attain that state, what is the process?
Paramatma form to...
So he is meditating on Paramatma form, yes. But what is the process? How he gives up his body? Okay. That is further described. He is sitting in a meditative posture, trying to lift the life air from the lower chakra to the higher chakra, raising to the top chakra, and then leaving the soul through the skull, ripping apart the skull, he leaves and just enters into the impersonal Brahman. And the process is described that he should be completely focused on his goal, lifting the life air, moving upward, 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 and then giving up his body, blocking away all the other holes of the body. Because for such a yogi who is trying to achieve this state by his own endeavor, he has to take care of all other circumstances, all other consideration. The living entity has to leave through the top region. If he leaves from a different region, he may attain a different destination. So he blocks all other holes of the body. So he says he sits in that posture, lotus posture, blocking the anus with his heel and closing all other openings of the body. So there are 9 gates to the body. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes there are 9 gates. And what are these 9 gates? Two nostrils, two eyes, two ears, mouth, anus, genital. So these are the 9 gates. So a yogi who wants to achieve perfection, he has to leave through the top region, blocking all other gates of the body. So he closes all other gates, he closes the anus through the heel, and then he raises the life here from one chakra to another chakra, going, moving upward. And what are all these chakras? So the bottommost chakra is called Mooladhara chakra. And in his meditation process, by controlling his breathing process, he raises the soul from Mooladhara chakra to Swadhishtha chakra, then Manipurka chakra, then Ananta chakra, then Vishuddha chakra, then Agya chakra, and then the topmost chakra, Sahasra chakra. And then from the skull he leaves. And there are many yogis to attain perfection in that way. Actually, they get into the meditative state and they can choose the time of their leaving the body. They have that much control because of their yogic abilities. And to attain full perfection in that, they will tell their disciple that I want to leave at this particular time, and to make sure I attain the full perfection, you can facilitate my leaving the body. And how they facilitate? They will fill their big jatas with the oil, with the ghee, and make this softer so that they can break open the skull and leave from there. And sometimes even they go to the extent, they will tell the disciple to break a coconut on their skull to facilitate their leaving from that region. There are many yogis like that. But with the mercy of the Lord, we don't have to adopt to that process. In Kali Yuga, the process is very simple, straightforward. Even though we are listening to all these various descriptions, this is good to know, but it doesn't mean we have to practice that. For us, the recommended process is Kalahutad Hari Kirtana, the chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we have to just add Krishna in our life while doing all our Swadharma, our occupational duties, the duties based on our Varna and Ashrama. Add Krishna into the picture. Take shelter of Krishna's holy name, association of devotees, and then we can attain the same state of perfection in this very life. So a yogi has to endeavor in that way, who has full fixed goal of merging into the impersonal Brahman. So we'll stop here, the description of how a yogi who is meditating on the Paramatma aspect, how he achieves perfection. So his goal is impersonal Brahman. And the yogi who is meditating on the universal form, what is his goal? End goal? His end goal is ultimately purifying his senses and gradually come to the state of meditating onto the Paramatma. There is no other actual goal for that type of yogi. And if a yogi who is meditating on the universal form of the Lord and he has still not purified his senses enough, he still has to leave with the subtle body. And then he has to come back, acquire some another life form and continue his journey. He may become eligible to go to Swarga or to even Brahmaloka, or ultimately he have to come back to this earth planet and continue his journey. And in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks similar question. What is the situation of an unsuccessful yogi who is not able to attain full perfection in this yoga? And Krishna described two scenarios. Either he attains to the Swargas or enjoy the results and then he is born into the aristocratic family, or he is directly born into a Brahminical family where he is given that understanding, right knowledge, where he can continue his journey further. ग्रंथराज भागवतम की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय,
श्री रविंद्रनाथ प्रभु की जय,
श्रील प्रभुपाद की
जय।
So if anybody has any question, comment. Yes, bro.
Yeah, like four questions. So my original question was describe the state of merging with Brahman. You already addressed some of it, but I'm still not exactly trying to understand about, you said something about losing your subtle body.
So subtle body means we have to, one gives up his
mind
intelligence, false ego. And then he, just in the spiritual body, he enters. Moves on to his next destination, which is either impersonal Brahman or enter into the spiritual world based on what is his eligibility.
So impersonal Brahman, is there like some form? Can you describe the state of that? It's like consciousness, or I'm just a little confused.
So I can describe only what theoretical description is given, right? Because our eligibility is not there in that state yet. I have not seen that impersonal Brahman state. Right, so Brahman is effulgence of the Lord, and in that every individual living entity, which is a spark, that still reside in that impersonal Brahman. To understand that, I can just give you one analogy, which can make it maybe a little better to understand. As you can look at the sun rays, right? If you look at the sun rays from a side or something, you will see some particles hanging into the sun rays. So that individual particle, you can just consider it as an individual living entity into the rays of those impersonal Brahman. So the living entity, we may not see a 6 feet long person, 6 feet tall person, but it's just as a spark, the size of the soul. What is the size of the soul described in Bhagavad Gita or in the scriptures? Size of the soul is what? One by 100. 10,000 of the tip of the hair. So like that, as a spark, the living entity just stays in that impersonal Brahman, which is the rays of light emanating from the body of the Lord.
Usually it's merging into Lord himself, right?
It's merging into the
It's form of Lord.
It's just light, basically, which Prabhupada described as void, right? People say void. That's why the...
Even then, at some point, the soul wants to, may want to enjoy, and so that's when the soul...
So for enjoy, he has to first come back, and then become eligible to go into the spiritual world. Because the criteria to become eligible is possible in the material world only. From the spiritual sky, from the impersonal Brahman level, he cannot go to the spiritual world.
So, subtle body may go, but the spiritual desire may still awaken at some point.
So, as we discussed last time, there is a subtle body and gross body. We give up our gross body, but the subtle body, the soul, it also has its senses, subtle senses. So the whole body is there, even though it's the size of a spark, but the whole body is there. As a subtle body, subtle senses are there. In the spiritual world also, the living entity, it has its own savrupa, it has its senses, and it's enjoying there with Krishna.